Oscar Pistorius established a new standard for disadvantaged athletes when he earned the right to run in the 2012 Olympics on his prosthetic legs. He was known and admired worldwide as the Blade Runner. Then on February 14, 2013, he shot and killed his girlfriend, South African model Reeva Steenkamp. John Carlin's book about the life of Oscar Pistorius, the killing of Reeva Steenkamp, and the trial that followed is titled Chase Your Shadow, The Trials of Oscar Pistorius. John Carlin, welcome to Only a Game.
Pleasure to be here.
You say in the book, and I'm quoting, running had shaped the public identity of Oscar Pistorius and raised him to impossible heights. I've even heard it said that he was second only to Nelson Mandela in the way he was admired in his home country. Does that ring true to you?
Yes, I would say that's right. Nelson Mandela obviously stands head and shoulders above everybody else in South Africa, but certainly in recent years, the only person who really sort of, you know, remotely competed with Mandela in terms of national acclaim in South Africa was Oscar Pistorius, who was viewed as a great example and as a heroic figure across all the racial and religious and ideological lines that make up the South African Rainbow Nation.
Still, before he shot and killed Reeva Steenkamp, Oscar Pistorius may have been guilty of firing a gun out of the sunroof of a car. Two companions said that he had done that. He certainly was guilty of discharging a gun in a restaurant, and he was a notoriously fast, many said reckless, driver. Were his admirers unaware of all that?
Well, that's a very good question. See, I think the tendency of the media, by and large, was to nourish that image, that heroic image, and shy away from elements of Pistorius's personality that might have undermined that heroic image. And it was only after he killed Reeva Steenkamp when suddenly the impulse became the opposite impulse. It was then that we started hearing more and more about his crazed, reckless obsession with guns, how he would drive cars at 160 miles an hour down public highways before it had been kept largely hidden from the public eye.
On that Valentine's Day evening in 2013, Oscar Pistorius claimed that he thought an intruder had climbed into his home via the bathroom window and then locked himself in the bathroom. Pistorius said he feared for his life when he fired four times into the bathroom door. You've done all the homework for this book. Do you now find that claim credible?
Well, put it this way, I find it less completely and utterly incredible than I did at the beginning. I mean, when I first heard Pistorius's version, I mean, it just seemed to me like a very, very unlikely story. However, I began to get a much broader sense of Pistorius's character and to see how extraordinarily fearful and vulnerable he was, and how indeed, contrary to the image of the superhero that he'd been so eager to project, he was actually, of course, in truth, a man who went to bed at night without his prosthetic legs on. In a country where it's pretty normal to be paranoid because of the high crime rate, he was more paranoid than most. And so while even now I consider the story to be so implausible, I do not completely rule it out as a possibility. And in fact, having sat through the whole trial and seeing how little evidence, how unconvincing the prosecution was, my view now is that both stories are extraordinarily implausible. And I'm not going to stand here, as a lot of people do, and tell you categorically that I know what happened that night.
Oscar Pistorius was convicted in September of culpable homicide. You maintain that the outcry after the sentencing, where he was sentenced to only 5 years in prison, would have been far greater if the judge had been male and white rather than female and black. Talk a little bit about that.
One of the really fascinating aspects of this whole trial is that here you had the most famous white man in South Africa being tried by a black lady judge. Now, the reaction of Pistorius's defense team, and indeed Pistorius's family, was some dismay, because they imagined, among other things, that there would be a predisposition on the part of the judge to assume this fell into the category of domestic violence, of gender violence. Had it been a white male judge, I think we can be pretty confident that there would have been far more of an outcry and far more of a notion that there'd been an element of racial favoritism here and so forth. So I think it proved somewhat paradoxically, I think, to Pistorius's favor.
Just this week, we learned that the prosecution will appeal the verdict in the Pistorius trial. This is something that doesn't happen in the United States. You can't appeal an acquittal. But the Supreme Court of Appeal will decide whether he should have been convicted of murder rather than culpable homicide. What will their argument be, and how do you think the appeals court will rule?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't surprised by the judge granting the right to appeal because in the end, this case came down to a very, very fine point. It's not so much, actually, as to whether Pistorius knowingly killed Reeva Steenkamp. I think it is agreed by all sides that the prosecution failed to come up with the evidence to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. But in those moments when Oscar Pistorius fired those four bullets through that bathroom door, did he have murder in his heart? Or was he in a sort of state of blind, reckless panic and was just at that moment unaware of the likely consequences? Now, the judge opted for the second of those two, namely manslaughter, namely what they call in South Africa culpable homicide. Now, the prosecution is saying, yes, but we believe that actually someone who fires, you know, four bullets, and they were dumb bullets, you know, the ones that explode on impact, he must have known he was going to kill a human being, that he was going to murder somebody.
I have to ask you one specific question, having read your book, because I can't get it out of my mind. According to Oscar Pistorius's own testimony, he screamed at Reeva Steenkamp, "Call the police, call the police." He did this several times. She never answered him. Why did he go ahead and blast bullets through the bathroom door? Wouldn't he have wondered where she was?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, that is an extremely good question. And you also have to wonder, you know, before he went blasting off down the corridor to the bathroom, why didn't he look and see whether she was in the bed? Look, it's going to remain a mystery. And I remain totally open to the possibility that he did indeed knowingly kill her. And indeed, I'm sure that the judge, if you pin the judge down, if you sit down with her in private and say, "Judge, what do you really think happened?" She will say, "Well, look, I'm not going to act like God and say that I know. All I can do is base myself on the evidence that was provided." It's a very, very curious story. And I rather suspect that we're never going to know categorically, definitively, to the satisfaction of everybody, what happened that night. And it's going to become one of these JFK type stories where there's going to be various theories put forward and questions asked, precisely like the question you asked me just a moment ago.
John Carlin is the author of Chase Your Shadow, The Trials of Oscar Pistorius, and he joined me from the BBC in London. John, thank you very much for speaking with me.
My pleasure. Thank you.